Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell's here, and we're with Frank Soloway. In this time of great change, I'm back to where I started. If we can begin to understand some of the large things, I don't know quite the word for it, some of the large rules, if you will, that are nature, and begin to put human beings back into nature, don't we have a great deal to learn? Things like, yes, birth order plays a role, and then you can move forward from it?
Yes, I think, enlightenment on any aspect of human behavior is always wonderfully helpful in understanding why we do what we do. It's very inhibiting, for example, to have been shackled with a wrong theory of human motivation. A lot of psychoanalytic theory has proved to be unreliable, largely due to lack of adequate testing. Marxist theory of human motivations has turned out to be a disappointment. One of the great success stories that we have is the consistent role of Darwinian theory in leading to insight after insight about human behavior. It's becoming an ever more subtle story as well, because a lot of what we can now say about human behavior is Darwinism with a completely environmental twist. It's not a story about having genes for this or that. It's a story about how, in childhood, we all do adaptive things that are in our Darwinian interests. And that's a story about learning. And so we're now beginning to understand how we can tell Darwinian stories about personality development that are not stories about genetic determinism. They're really stories about the cleverness of the human spirit in learning how to deal with obstacles, including siblings. And so it's a wonderful new sort of breath of life on a Darwinian worldview. And it's a Darwinian worldview that's beginning to tell us why we're so different from each other rather than why we're all the same.
You quote someone with a wonderful line referring to Darwin's work with the Galapagos finches, that the brain, our mind, is analogous to the various sizes of the beaks on the birds that Darwin first studied and made the great connection in his own mind, that it is the human mind that lets us go into niches and make some progress. Did I read that right?
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful line by Jonathan Weiner in his book, The Beak of the Finch. The Galapagos finches are the famous example of evolution in action. All their little beaks are adapted to the different niches they occupy in the Galapagos. Now, for humans, the mind is our beak. We adapt our mind like a multiplex tool. It's like a Swiss Army knife. And it has an infinite number of little abilities to it that become sharpened through learning and through experience.
And competition.
And competition, yes. Many parents look upon sibling competition, sibling rivalry, as somehow pathological. They don't, in fact, appreciate it. It's been around for hundreds of millions of years, and it's a way in which those darling little offspring sharpen their claws and actually go on to achieve things in life, doing so, to some extent, by competing with each other. So sibling rivalry is a powerfully constructive aspect of human development.
There's almost a continuity. It sounds like Bill Calvin posits, hasn't proven, but posits.
Bill Calvin being a neurobiologist.
Neurophysiologist.
Yes, it's a hard one for me to say.
That is, in fact, how the brain works, how the mind works, is what he characterizes a fast Darwin machine. That is, the competition of idea is not the right word, but the competition of inchoate and incipient ideas, and the ones that win come to the fore, and that, you know, the memories and our thinking, and in a way you're externalizing that into the environment. But there seems to be a continuity, you know, from, you know, across the full spectrum, which to me is absolutely striking.
Yes, the of course what goes on at the neurobiological level is competition just at that level. And what goes on in life experience is competition at another level. But the reason that competition is so vital to both is that competition is what shapes adaptive strategies in the Darwinian world.
Mm-hmm. So Darwin had a pretty good idea, huh?
He was a smart cookie.
That's a technical term.
I want to compliment you on the range of really interesting ideas that you surface as you work through, starting with the concept, with the conclusion it took you 26 years to get to. You, in fact, put out a whole range of ideas that include birth order, but are not stopped by that. And in a way, it's almost as if you're practicing what you preach. Did you do that on purpose?
I was very conscious early on that telling the story as a sort of a one-variable story would be doing a great injustice to the way we are as human beings. And I really wanted the richness that comes with a complex story. And that was the great virtue of spending 26 years on the book. I could tell that rich story and work in all those wonderful anecdotes about people's lives.
And you did. We thank you, Frank Soloway. Is published by Pantheon Books and will soon also be available in paperback. Frank Soloway's understated modesty and gracious ways were matched by his eagerness to share with us what he has learned. We appreciate his rigorous work and his generous spirit. Thank you, Frank Soloway. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.